Mark 1:40-45. Jesus cleanses a leper. A leper came to him, begging him, and kneeling, he said to him, "If you choose, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, and said to him, "I do choose. Be made clean." Immediately the leprosy left him, and he was made clean. After sternly warning him, he sent him away at once, saying to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded as a testimony to them." But he went out and began to proclaim it freely and to spread the word, so that Jesus could no longer go into a town openly, but stayed out in the country, and people came to him from every quarter.
When I was about 8, my father's mother, my gran, came to stay with us in Australia. It had been about 2 years since we'd left the UK. And in that 2 years, I'd done very well my lessons of learning how to talk Australian. So my grandmother came with some very different and newly and strange, what were now strange ways to me of talking. She would go and look in her cookbook before she actually cooked anything. If she was very surprised, she would say, "Well, I'll go to the foot of our stairs," which probably made more sense in a country where you lived in two-storey houses than it did in Australia in our single level. And if you tried to put one over her, she would say, "I'm not as green as I'm cabbage looking." The one thing that we didn't hear her say very often, but would be said with some force, was if she got cross. She would say, "I am very vexed with you. Very vexed." I must admit, my next sister Dan and I were a little bit confused, as when she got really upset and was very vexed, she would often go and take a bex and go and have a good lie down. And we were never quite clear of the connection between being vexed and having a bex, but that was her word. If she was cross with us, she was very vexed. I don't know, what's your word for you when you're angry? There are lots of different words, depending on how upfront we are in expressing it and how strongly we're feeling. We could be upset, frustrated, annoyed, furious, apoplectic, incensed, or just a little peeved. Some experts think that in this story of Jesus healing the leper, that it's more about Jesus being angry, about Jesus being moved with anger, than it is about being moved with pity or with compassion. There's some debate about the correctness of the Greek text. Now, as you probably know, the earliest manuscripts were written hundreds of years after the originals were brought together. And in that time, mistakes in copying, ambiguities, even deliberate corrections based on a particular theological viewpoint or community tradition have all contributed to there being in places numerous possibilities for what the original text might have been. There aren't as many as we might think considering the age of the manuscripts, but there are enough. These accumulated over the years. And so there are places in which there seem to be a choice of different ways that the passage can be interpreted. There's a number of clues that textual commentators use in trying to decide the most likely original words, including the age of the manuscript, the older the better usually, the number and origin of manuscripts with different texts, and references to the texts in other ancient writings. Another guide they use is the difficulty of the reading. And here the general rule seems to be that the more difficult reading is likely to be the original reading. And this is on the basis that if someone's going to make a correction, they are more likely to change a difficult reading to an easier reading than to confuse the matter by making a difficult reading out of an easy one. So, while the translation we heard earlier suggests that Jesus was moved by pity, There are those who prefer the reading that Jesus was moved by anger. They think it's more likely that overzealous copyists changed the original angry to a more acceptable pity or compassion than the other way around. Well, if they're right, what might Jesus be angry about? Well, let's have a quick recap of what's happened in the Gospel so far. John the Baptist has appeared, telling of the one to come. And the voice from heaven has spoken as John baptised Jesus, who was then immediately driven out into the desert to be tested. John is arrested and Jesus starts preaching, the kingdom of God is at hand. Jesus calls disciples and they go to Capernaum to the synagogue where Jesus teaches and drives out a demon and then goes back to Simon's place and heals Simon's mother-in-law and a whole lot of others and tries to get away for a bit of quiet time and getting on with proclaiming the good news. That has all happened in Mark's gospel so far and we're only up to verse 39. Are you feeling tired? And then the leper approaches Jesus. There are all sorts of reasons I can imagine for Jesus being angry. I can imagine him being angry at being interrupted again with yet another demand, with someone wanting something from him when he should be getting on with the mission of preaching the good news. I can imagine anger at being approached by someone who's unclean and who is therefore for risking making Jesus unclean, which means Jesus won't be able to mix with people or go to the synagogue. But the thing is, really, neither of those strike me as consistent with what we read about Jesus elsewhere in the Gospel. An angry response from Jesus perhaps might have arisen from the statement put to him by the man, "If you choose, you can make me clean." If you choose. If you choose has an implication that Jesus might choose not to make him clean. An implication that the reign of God which Jesus proclaims might not include the choice of healing and wholeness. It's an implication that allowing the man to remain unclean, ostracised, out of community, without hope, might actually be part of God's will for that man. And I can certainly understand that making Jesus angry because it's the sort of thing that can make me angry too. For I don't believe it's part of God's will for any human being to be condemned to a life out of community or on the margin or to feel uncared for, unworthy or despised. I don't believe it's God's punishment or part of a wider plan or a deliberate choice of God to teach us. Although, of course, there is much we can learn in these situations. Rather, I would affirm with the psalm writer, whose psalm was the basis for our call to worship, that God, rather than inflicting grief and despair, is the one who would choose to bring us out of despair and turn our mourning into dancing. God is the one who wants God's people, all of God's people, to know joy in the morning and rejoice. Perhaps that's what made Jesus angry. As I said, I can imagine that as it makes me angry. But then I did imagine all those other reasons why it might have made him angry. Angry at being interrupted. Angry at the implications for his ministry. Maybe he was just tired. But I think those ones are so easy for us to imagine. Because unless you're all very different from me, I think it's somewhere we've all been. We've all felt that. We don't always feel compassion when faced with a request for help. Or at least, we don't only feel compassion. Sometimes we feel, well, irritated or overwhelmed or tired or fed up or distracted or just plain angry at somebody else asking us to do something. But as I continued on thinking about that, what struck me was, well, the leper, does he really care? Does he care what Jesus feels? Or does he just care about what Jesus does? Jesus reaches out his hand to him. Jesus touches him and changes his life. For the man with leprosy, is this what is important? Not what Jesus feels, but what Jesus does. I was unclean, and now I am clean. I was overcome with disease, and now I am healed. My isolation is ended. Now I can rejoin community. Now, I certainly think that we want to aim to respond to people with compassion in our hearts. But is what we are feeling really what is at issue? C.S. Lewis, in his book The Screwtape Letters, imagines an exchange of correspondence between a senior demon called Screwtape and his nephew and apprentice, Wormwood, who he is mentoring into the ways of demonhood. Time and again, Screwtape urges Wormwood to shift people's focus towards their internal feelings rather than focusing on God and on living out their faith. Keep them watching their own minds, Screwtape advises, trying to produce feelings there by the action of their own wills. When they mean to ask God for charity, let them instead start trying to manufacture charitable feelings. When they meant to pray for courage, let them really be trying to feel super brave. Teach them to estimate the value of each prayer by the success in producing the desired feeling. Now, I'm not trying to say it's a waste of time to feel compassionate or loving or caring. It's not. These are good things, very good things. What I'm saying is sometimes it's not possible. It's just so hard. Sometimes it seems impossible because of the situation, because of what else is going on in our lives, and sometimes because of our human limitations. But faithful discipleship is not about getting the feelings right. It's not about portraying a picture of peaceful participation in worship when our minds are really a frenzy of worry. It's not about showing sympathy for people in need when we're in the grip of our own concerns. It's not about manufacturing excitement when offered a new opportunity when we really are overwhelmed with anxiety. Faithful discipleship is not at its heart about getting the feelings right. It's about living right, about acting right. Perhaps this story of Jesus feeling angry but acting with compassion can remind us that discipleship means loving God and loving our neighbour through the way we act and what we do, even when we are angry or anxious or distracted or fed up and tired and miserable or vexed. And perhaps it's a reminder that sometimes when we need others and they respond with irritation, even as they do the things we need, that we can cut them a little slack and accept graciously help that is not always graciously offered. We can't always control how we feel, but we can control how we choose to respond. Sometimes discipleship means responding faithfully to unexpected and unwelcome demands, and sometimes that is just plain hard. But we are not alone. We don't rely only on our own capacity for compassion. Living out our discipleship is not so much about the feeling we are moved with as it is about how we move, how we love, move and act to respond. And it's not just relying on our own capacity to feel compassion or even to feel anger when it is needed, for there are times when anger is right. It's about our capacity to allow ourselves to connect with that divine compassion and justice in which we all live and move and have our being, and letting that flow through us, even when we can't feel it, when we can't feel it, so that we can touch the world with healing and wholeness and God's love.